Hello, and welcome to Tech Talk. Your reader for Tech Talk will be Paul Hinkle, and your Tech Talk articles will come from the New York Times Technology section. Article number one. Elena Gassler often saw her mother growing frustrated with blind spots when driving the family's old Jeep Grand Cherokee in their Pennsylvania neighborhood. The issue inspired Ms. Gassler, 14, to design a system that uses a webcam to show anything that might be blocked from a driver's sight. A panel of scientists, engineers, and educators was so impressed with her prototype that she won the $25,000 top prize at the annual Broadcom Masters competition in Washington last week. "I was shaking so much when they called my name because I did not expect it all," Ms. Gassler said Wednesday. She beat 29 other middle school students in the science and engineering competition, which drew 2,348 applicants nationwide. The Broadcom Masters, or Math, Applied Science, Technology, and Engineering for Rising Stars, is an annual competition from the nonprofit Broadcom Foundation and the Society for Science and the Public. In addition to the science fair project, students were also evaluated on their performance during peer challenges that included coding, engineering, and designing. Ms. Glasser's mother, Megan, said the award showed her daughter is a well-rounded individual and not just someone who had a good idea. "It felt like you were in a cave. The windows were small, the pillars were large," her mother said of the old Jeep. "You could lose a person or a car in your line of sight." Maya Ajmera, president and chief executive of the Society for Science and the Public, said Elena stood out not only for her project, but also for her leadership, communication skills, and teamwork with other students. "Everybody hates blind spots. A lot of accidents happen because of blind spots," Ms. Ajmera said. She took something very personal to her. "How do I make this easier for my mom?" And from there, it became an incredible science project. Ms. Gassler, now a freshman at Avon Grove Charter School in West Grove, Pennsylvania, said she wanted to improve automobile safety by removing blind spots created by vehicles' A-pillars, which support the car's frame and hold windshields in place. "There are so many car accidents and injuries and deaths that could have been prevented from a pillar not being there, and since we can't take it out of cars, I decided to get rid of it without getting rid of it," she said in her award video. Her materials included a projector, a webcam, and reflective fabric. After attaching a webcam on the outside of a car's A-pillar on the passenger side, a projector was mounted underneath the car's roof to project the image onto the pillar or blind spot, she said. To help the image become clearer and brighter, she applied reflective fabric on the pillar so that the image can be seen only by the driver. She added that the system worked during test drives with her father, Paul. The family posted a video of the design on YouTube, where it had more than 2 million views by Wednesday night. For her next prototype, she plans to use LCD screens instead of a projector because the screens would allow the driver to adjust the brightness and orientation of the image, she said. Ms. Gassler hopes that her prototype will be used by car and tech companies someday. Her family no longer has the Jeep that was used in the project. "I would love to show my project to Tesla, because they are always looking for ways to make their cars safer, and they are always looking for more futuristic features to put in their cars," she said. Article number two. Where the packages go. As the flow of deliveries continues to increase, New York City residential buildings have implemented high-tech solutions. Package deliveries are overtaking New York City, and the way many residential buildings have responded to the influx is to go high-tech. UPS reported an almost 29% increase in U.S. average daily package volume from 2008 to 2018, and they've got the brown boxes to prove it. But for many New Yorkers, coming home to find deliveries stacked in the vestibule, hidden behind the building's garbage cans, or worst of all, left outside a locked door, is a thing of the past. Instead, locker systems with real-time notifications, lobby screens showing package emojis for each apartment, and front door systems that allow residents to let delivery people into their homes remotely are helping New Yorkers take back their hallways and get their stuff on time. Georgiana Oliver, the chief executive and founder of Package Concierge, a self-service locker solution designed to automate the delivery of packages, said the biggest issue her customer base of apartment buildings in New York City faced was space constraint. There is nowhere for all the packages, she said. In most cases, a hallway is the chosen spot for the locker system. The average 200-unit building receives 70 packages a day, and it can take 12 to 20 hours for residents to pick them up, said Ms. Oliver. Next thing you know, there's 100 unclaimed boxes. It's definitely about managing the package flow, she said. We have a formula for how we determine a building's needs. 100 units requires a 30 to 40 locker system that takes up 7 to 8 feet of hallway space. So far, Package Concierge has made it to 137 buildings in the New York metropolitan area, with 25 of them in New York City, including Riverbank, a luxury apartment building in Hell's Kitchen. The lockers at Riverbank are neutral and streamlined, but the color and size of the lockers can be made to match the look of each individual lobby. Everything we do is customized as far as size and color, said Ms. Oliver. The wraps can be flamingos or Tiffany boxes, she said, describing some of the more fanciful overlays that buildings have chosen for their lockers. Residents seem happy with the addition. They love it because they don't have a security issue, and they know where their package is, she said. We take a photo of every transaction. They're impressed with the technology. Ms. Oliver said that in buildings with lockers, about 80% of residents opted to use the system. If residents choose not to sign up, they receive a registration reminder, but they can have packages shipped elsewhere, such as their office. In buildings with an actual human concierge, the lockers have provided relief from the onslaught. The concierge had to spend so much time on packages that they didn't have time to do their real job, she said. Smaller buildings around town have also implemented new systems to deal with package delivery. Jay Greenberg, principal of Z&G Property Group, has installed Latch, a full building access system that allows you to manage and open doors with a smartphone or a door code. We have 12 buildings, mostly in Brooklyn, and none of them have doormen, he said. These are small walk-up buildings with no room for a package area. Before Latch, tenants complained about packages being stolen whenever carriers would buzz an apartment and then leave packages outside the door of the building. We wanted a nice, stylish-looking lock that could get drivers into the building. Now they can enter the code and leave the package on the floor inside, Mr. Greenberg said. He noted that human interaction still played a vital role in package delivery. A new delivery person who doesn't know the system could mean the difference between a delivered box and the dreaded missed package slip that sends New Yorkers to wait in long lines at far-flung post offices, a proverbial package purgatory. You need the regular carrier, someone we have seen and are able to talk to, Mr. Greenberg said. The human element is not eliminated. He said that Latch has been a huge hit with tenants, though some residents have yet to download the necessary software and use the system at all. Scott Krause, a tenant in an 8-unit building in Bedford-Stuyvesant that Z&G owns and manages, was an early adapter. One thing that's really cool is that I have accounts with UPS and FedEx, said Mr. Krause, 37, the director of sales at Action IQ. I'll get a call that they are outside, and I'll text them a code to get them in the front door. Latch has partnered with UPS to train managers, who in turn train drivers, to make in-building deliveries with the system. Drivers scan packages with a handheld device called a dyad. When packages are scanned, a door code for that particular building pops up on the dyad, which they can enter into the Latch device at the building's front door to let themselves in. Latch started in New York and San Francisco, and this year began expanding to other cities. Internet of Things technology plays a pivotal role in our network and our ongoing mission to improve the customer experience, said Bill Smith, the Vice President of Global Product Innovation for UPS. The future could see an intersection of tech-enabled access control systems like smart access devices, parcel lockers, alternative pickup locations, and other technologies that give consumers delivery options and control. UPS is working on all of this. Even with all this new technology in place, Xavier C. Hernandez, a communications specialist for the United States Postal Service, stressed that there's still a need for human interaction. Our success in reaching into apartment or business mailboxes has always been a collaborative effort with the building's management team, who is responsible for providing that access, he said. Some buildings take things a step further, allowing doormen to actually enter a resident's apartment with packages to avoid a pileup in the lobby. Rebecca Blacker, a licensed real estate broker at Warburg Realty, said that all incoming packages in her Upper East Side building were logged by the doorman into BuildingLink, a property management software program. Residents have the option for packages to be placed inside their apartments. Ms. Blacker has two young children in diapers, and they frequently get big boxes of diapers delivered, so she regularly opts for in-apartment delivery. It's just like giving a permission to access your apartment when you're not home for a maintenance request, said Ms. Blacker. Hazel Towers, an 18-story building in the Pelham Bay section of the Bronx, uses Notify, a different software system that scans packages and notifies residents by text or email when something has arrived for them. Carla Carroll, 56, a merchandiser for an eyewear company who has lived in Hazel Towers for the past 14 years with her husband and high school-aged daughter, gets frequent deliveries for her business and said Notify has definitely improved package delivery in the building. Before the Notify system, it was more hectic for concierges to identify, process, and log in packages, said Ms. Carroll. The turnaround time for a delivery was a bit longer, especially at key shipping times of the year. She especially appreciates the reminder texts she gets when she hasn't picked up a package within 24 hours. Another system that's gaining traction in New York City is Luxor One Lockers. Luxor One processes over 40 million deliveries and has more than over 4,500 locker locations in the U.S. and Canada, according to Melody Akhtari, the company's director of marketing and communications. Pace University, for example, has over 423 lockers at five different locations on the city campus. They are also being used by the residents of the Lafayette Boynton apartments in the Soundview neighborhood of the Bronx. Dazney Troshi, a hospital clerical associate who has lived there since 1996, said that before the lockers were installed, packages occasionally went astray. But now they come consistently, and when I order something, I know that I'm going to receive it. Madelina Krusher, a licensed associate real estate broker with Halsted, said that innovative package solutions help remove listings. Residents at the Gretsch Building in Williamsburg appreciate the screen in the building lobby that shows emojis of boxes or hangers for residents who had deliveries or dry cleaning waiting for them. People love that the system at the Gretsch is advanced and feels high-tech. It is definitely a selling point, she said. But not all buildings in the city have modernized. Vivian Ducat, another Halsted agent, said that when she sold a house in the Flatbush section of Brooklyn, the buyers initially could not figure out where all their packages were going. They discovered from speaking to a neighbor that all packages automatically went to the bodega at the end of the block, said Ms. Ducat. Fortunately, there were no complaints from the new homeowners about their low-tech system. They feel like it's a very nice, homey touch. Now, article number 3. Remember family films? Disney Plus is making them like they used to. For its new streaming service, Disney is reviving small movies in the mold of Old Yeller. Expect to see another Doggone Hero, Santa's Daughter, and remakes of classics like Home Alone. In 1957, millions of people plunked down 62 cents each to see Old Yeller, a simple, sentimental Disney movie about a boy and his doggone dog in post-Civil War Texas. The well-reviewed film, a nice, trim little family picture, as the New York Times critic Bosley Crowther called it, was such a smash hit that Disney booked a return engagement a few years later. Once again, Old Yeller brought out the masses. Now try to imagine Old Yeller on a theater marquee today. I'll wait. Most likely it wouldn't even get made. Too PG rated, no superheroes, limited overseas box office potential. Art films aren't the only ones having a hard time getting noticed in theaters these days. Nice, trim little family pictures can't make the multiplex economics work either. Disney pulled the plug on the genre a few years ago, citing the soaring cost of marketing theatrical releases, the collapse of the DVD market, and competition from living room video on demand services. Instead, Disney retrenched to focus exclusively on effects-driven mega movies that jackhammer people away from their Facebook and Fortnite accounts. We're really proud of those smaller films we were making, Queen of Katwe, McFarland USA, but we couldn't get them to work as a business, Sean Bailey, the president of production for Disney's flagship movie division, said, rather glumly. Theaters were no longer a hospitable home for them. But never fear, the streaming era is here. Like a factory restarting an abandoned assembly line, now that the boom times have returned, Disney is reviving its smaller-scale movie operation to make content for Disney Plus, the company's Netflix-style streaming service that blasts off on Tuesday. Once again, Disney will make inspirational sports dramas, gentle teen romances, live-action animal adventure films, and slapstick comedies, original to screen stories, in the spirit of beloved Disney movies like Remember the Titans, The North Avenue Regulars, and yes, Old Yeller. Togo, for instance, arrived on Disney Plus next month. Set in Alaska in 1925 and based on a true story, the $40 million film stars Willem Dafoe as a cranky musher. His top dog Togo, once an unwanted runt, must summon the strength in his twilight years to do the impossible. Lead a team of sled dogs through a blizzard and across a treacherous frozen lake so that medicine can be fetched for dying children back home. He's the only hope. Got one more in you, pup? Defoe's frontiersman asks, unsure of himself of the answer. Filmed in the Canadian Rockies, Togo is an edge-of-your-seat adventure, the cracking ice, the approaching cliff, with a puddle of tears ending. At one test screening, even a macho security guy patrolling the theater for digital pirates was weeping. I flat-out bawled. It's not just a push-the-buttons dog movie, Bailey said, the verve returning to his voice. It's an epic adventure that is wildly cinematic. Disney Plus will serve up 10 new films during its first year. Budgets range between $20 million and $60 million. Grace VanderWaal, a 15-year-old known for winning the America's Got Talent televised talent show, will make her acting debut in Stargirl, a bespoke little musical about being yourself and the thrill of young love. It has an indie vibe, something on the sunnier end of the Sundance Film Festival, perhaps, with a hat tip to The Perks of Being a Wallflower, an Independent Spirit Award winner in 2013. The whole be yourself thing can start to feel very narrow and preachy, said Julia Hart, Fast Color, who directed Stargirl. I wanted to make something for young people that felt authentic. And then there is Flora and Ulysses, which focuses on a cynical girl and a squirrel who develop superpowers after getting caught in a vacuum cleaner. The fast-rising filmmaker Lena Khan is directing this comedy romp, adapted from Kate DiCamillo's children's book, which won the John Newbery Medal in 2014. Not silly enough? Noelle is a candy-coated Christmas comedy, complete with a cutesy flying reindeer named Snowcone, that stars Anna Kendrick as Santa's daughter and Bill Hader as her AWOL brother. Suzanne Todd from Bad Moms produced it. Stargirl and Flora and Ulysses will arrive on Disney Plus in the coming months. Noelle will be available on Tuesday. We've seen holiday films perform really well with our competitors, said Ricky Strauss, the president of content and marketing for Disney Plus. Last December, The Christmas Chronicles was a colossal hit for Netflix, generating 20 million streams in its first week. Some of the new films coming to Disney Plus are remakes. Also on Tuesday, for instance, subscribers will be able to stream a live-action version of Lady and the Tramp, originally screened in 1955, with rescue dogs in the lead roles. It's a faithful retelling of the classic story right down to the spaghetti-sharing scene, Strauss said. Disney gave the Siamese cat song the heave-ho, though in recent years that nasally number and the accompanying animation have been criticized as perpetuating racist stereotypes about Asian people. To replace the sequence, the actress-musician Janelle Monáe and her Wonderland Artist Collective wrote a new tune. The cats are now Devon Rexes. Inclusion reigns in The New Lady and the Tramp, which remains set in the South around 1910. Monáe also provides a voice for Peg, the tempestuous Tibetan spaniel who sings the bluesy He's a Tramp, while cooling her heels in the pound. Tessa Thomas gives Lady her voice, while Kiersey Clemons plays Darling, the young wife who receives Lady as a Christmas present. Jock, the friendly Scottish Terrier next door, is now female, with Ashley Jensen doing the vocal work. Justin Theroux voices the tramp. Disney Plus will eventually be home to new versions of Home Alone, originally screened in 1990, Night at the Museum from 2006, and Cheaper by the Dozen, last rebooted in 2003. Those franchises became a part of Disney's vast collection of intellectual property when its acquisition of 20th Century Fox became official this year. But Bailey, the production chief, emphasized that Disney Plus movies would, on the whole, allow the company to place bets on original to screen stories, films that we love creatively but have become harder and harder to make succeed theatrically. He pointed to Safety, a drama based on the true story of Ray Ray McElthaby, who as a football player for Clemson University in 2006 tried to secretly raise his 11-year-old brother on campus to protect him from their drug-addicted mother. Another example, Timmy Failure, Mistakes Were Made, an off-kilter comedic drama headed to Disney this year. Directed by Tom McCarthy, Timmy Failure tells the meandering story of an extremely eccentric fifth grader and his trusty imaginary polar bear. The film, which cost about $42 million to make, computer-generated polar bears are pricey, takes place in present-day Oregon and follows the pair as they cluelessly investigate a potential hamster homicide and other crimes. It is based on the best-selling children's book series by Stephen Pastis, who is also known for creating the Pearls Before Swine comic strip. Movies like Timmy don't really get made, McCarthy said by phone. It owes more to independent cinema than anything. McCarthy's most recent movie, Spotlight, the newspaper drama about the Roman Catholic Church's cover-up of sexual abuse by priests, was named Best Picture at the 2016 Academy Awards. He won an Oscar for writing its screenplay with Joss Singer and was nominated as Best Director. Which raises a question. Why did he decide to follow up that triumph to flex his new power in Hollywood by making a movie that would go straight to streaming, bypassing theaters completely? In truth, Disney had to do some serious cajoling. I flew to New York and begged him to consider it, Bailey said. The man had initially discussed Timmy Failure as a theatrical release. Disney then shifted its big screen strategy. I was taken off guard and I had to process it a bit, McCarthy said. Finally, I told them, look, if I can make it like a movie, a real movie, then I'm in. We made it where we wanted to, how we wanted to, with the cast we wanted. With McCarthy on board, Disney was able to telegraph its streaming ambitions to Hollywood. We have serious filmmakers making movies for Disney+. It's not the kiddie table. Article number 4. Tech's environmental impact and what you can do about it. There are many eco-conscious steps to take around your tech, says John Schwartz, a climate reporter. Tech can also help us see the scope of climate change. How do New York journalists use technology in their jobs and in their personal lives? John Schwartz, a climate reporter, discussed the tech he's using. What does your tech setup look like for work and at home? It's pretty messy, and it's all about the laptop. I use a MacBook Pro that I carry back and forth. At work, the Times gives me a big second monitor and a dongle to charge the phone and tie in the backup drive. At home, I have a desk, but do much of my evening research and writing in an easy chair in the living room with the laptop propped up on the chair arm. More important than the way my system is set up is what I do with it. I've configured my computer system at work so that along with whatever stories I'm dealing with, the big extra monitor shows me a stream of photos of my grandkids, my children, and my folks. It's no news to readers that the technologies we use can make us jittery, angry, and sad. There's Twitter outrage, Facebook and Instagram FOMO, and the constant nagging of emails and Slack. And let's face it, writing about climate change for a living isn't exactly cheerful. So that stream of photos brings me little bursts of pleasure throughout my day, a regular lift. Similar images show up on my Apple Watch and iPhone. Why shouldn't technology bring us joy along with all that angst? You're a climate reporter and self-proclaimed Apple lover. Many Apple fans buy every new phone every year. Does your knowledge of the environmental impact of yearly upgrades change your tech consumption habits? I've been an Apple guy since buying my first Mac Plus in 1983, but I've never had the money to buy a new machine every year, and that kind of consumerism just isn't for me, despite my Apple fanboy ways. I'm cheap. My car is 11 years old, and I'll drive it until it dies. I wear clothes until they get so ragged that my wife sneaks over to the donation bin or into the trash. Even though my employer now provides my laptops, I don't push for the latest and greatest. So my understanding of the environmental costs of replacing tech hasn't changed my habits, though it's definitely a factor people should consider when the tech press starts trumpeting the latest toys. Buying gadgets or using any kind of online service consumes carbon and energy. In a looming climate crisis, is it possible to be an ethical tech consumer? If so, how should we go about it? The environmental and climate costs of the technology we use are stunning, but you can minimize your carbon footprint by buying refurbished goods instead of new, holding on to them a bit longer, repairing them instead of replacing them, or resell or recycle so that your old electronic devices are less likely to show up in landfills. I have been very happy with refurbished computers from Apple instead of buying new. If you want to incorporate ethical sourcing and low waste into your purchasing plans, there are companies like Fairphone, the Dutch social enterprise. What is some of the most interesting tech being used to monitor climate change? Science is so wonderfully accessible, some of the most fascinating work is there for you to read for yourself. All you need is a screen, an internet connection, and a browser to see what satellites tell us about the extent of ice loss in Greenland or river levels during spring flood season along the Mississippi River Basin. You can find out the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere at the Keeling Curve site and the extent to which the planet or even your state has warmed at the Ed Hawkins Show Your Stripes site. Or check out this amazingly simple feature that shows how much your hometown has warmed since you were born. You can watch Catherine Hayhoe's amazing Global Weirding video series, or be stunned by the amazing stories about climate change here at the Times. Outside of your job, what tech products are you personally obsessed with? For someone who loves technology, I don't have much of it in my house. My wife is a proud Luddite and doesn't like tech for tech's sake. We don't have an Alexa or HomePod or any of the talking gewgaws. No camera at the door. She yanked out all the wires for the security system that came with the house after it kept going off when the power went out. I'm still semi-Luddite in some ways myself. I wasn't recently visiting my daughter and son-in-law, and my granddaughter asked me to turn on Aquanauts for her. I couldn't even figure out how to turn on the TV. It required the game controller to choose among the channels and subscription services. It was a good excuse to read books instead. Having said that, I love my Apple Watch, which has worked its way into my consciousness in ways I hadn't expected. It tracks my exercise and lets me see my notifications without having to pull the phone out of my pocket and spend way too much time on my phone. The unobtrusive tech that gives me the most pleasure is my Jabra earbuds, which I use when I'm running and seem to be just about impervious to sweat. And the camera on my iPhone is my constant companion. I take daily pictures on my morning run and post them to Twitter and Instagram. That's it for Tech Talk for this week. Please join me again next week for the latest from the technology sector.